And welcome to Outbeat Collage Out in the Arts. This is a monthly show that focuses on local LGBT artists and highlights their work. The show airs the third Sunday of every month as part of Outbeat Radio, right here on KRCB, community-powered public radio. I'm Michaela Kinnon.
And I'm Gary Carnevale. Tonight we'll chat with Petaluma singer-songwriter Bobby Joe Valentine, who is performing all over North NorCal in support of his great CD, A Place to Belong. First up is Mike Gallipo, who produces Queer Contra Dance events here in the Bay Area. Never heard of Queer Contra Dancing? Well, neither had I until Mark contacted me. Mark will tell us all about it right after Greg Moralia and Outbeat Radio News.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, February 19th, 2012. Last week, the San Francisco Police Department became the first police department in the nation to release an It Gets Better video.
Hi, my name is Greg Sir, and I'm the Chief of Police for the San Francisco Police Department. I was a smallish young man here in San Francisco, and I'd get bullied all the time, even though I had many brothers and sisters, and I really appreciated when people stick up for me. I can't even imagine what it's like growing up as an LGBT youth today. And nobody deserves to be taunted or bullied. It does get better, and until it does, we here in the San Francisco Police Department are going to stick up for you. Believe me, it gets better.
The video was produced with the assistance of local filmmaker Sean Northcutt and musician Lyndon Blair. It features gay, lesbian, and transgender members of the San Francisco Police Department who each share a bit of their coming out story, as well as words of encouragement for LGBT youth. The video is also a powerful message for the still many closeted LGBT members of law enforcement who are already out working the streets across the country. You can see this video on YouTube. Just go to youtube.com and search for SFPD, It Gets Better. And here locally, like many independent bookstores, the Russian River Reader in Guerneville is struggling to stay open. The lesbian-owned establishment needs to turn things around in the next few months or it will have to close its doors. River Reader is the Russian River's only bookstore and acts as a gathering place for many in the community. Owner Susan Ryan is establishing a community-supported bookstore program for River Reader in hopes that the community the store supported for 18 years will return the favor in this hour of need. The program is inspired by the community-supported agriculture movement, which encourages customers to help local farmers be sustainable. This same program has been working for independent booksellers. Independent bookstores have been hard hit by chain stores, online discounters like Amazon, and ebooks. The program will help River Reader navigate the crests and throes of running a small retail operation while giving its customers a real stake in the store's continuing success as a sustainable and productive local business. Here's how it works. Customers deposit funds of between $150 and $500 in a River Reader community-supported bookstore program account. This can be used to pay for purchases. Participants get special member benefits, including a 5% discount on all in-store or online purchases, and even special orders. Membership is valid for 1 year from the date of the initial deposit. Ryan said, "My first year in business, the store earned enough money to make ends meet, so I know it's possible. In the succeeding years, the store earned less each year, with 2010 down 35%. But in 2011, sales were up 20%, and everything is well in place to continue that upward climb." She added, "I've worked with the small business development for the last 2 years, shaping and honing the business. I have a good marketing plan, and I'm drawing in people from out of the area. I now have an author event every week, and I am attracting big-time publishers. River Reader brings plenty to both the LGBT and local community, including acting as a revenue for new and local authors to promote their books, many of whom are LGBT, offering a 20% discount on books to local schools, acting as a host to 3 book clubs and poetry circles, and as a supporter of local businesses and charities, such as the Stewards of the Coast of the Redwoods and River Coast Child Services. You can learn more about the Russian River Reader at RussianRiverReader.com. Their store is located at 16355 Main Street in Guerneville. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Tuesday, February 21st at 6:30 p.m., the Transgender North Bay Group meets at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And also on Tuesday, a new volunteer orientation for Food for Thought, the Sonoma County AIDS Food Bank, takes place at 7 p.m. at 6550 Railroad Avenue in Forestville. And on Thursday, February 23rd at 6:30 p.m., the men's peer-to-peer HIV group gathers at the Face-to-Face Center, 873 2nd Street in Santa Rosa. And on Friday, February 24th at 7:30 p.m., PFLAG Santa Rosa meets at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And VIP tickets for the 32nd annual Russian River Women's Weekend are now on sale at www.russianriverwomensweekend.org. If you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Outbeat Collage with Michaela Kennan and Gary Carnevale.
And welcome back to Outbeat Collage Out in the Arts. Our first guest tonight is Mark Gallipo, who is one of the organizers of the San Francisco Bay Area Queer Contra Dance, which started in 2004 and has been thriving ever since. Mark lives here in Rohnert Park with his partner, whom he did meet through dancing. Mark, welcome to Outbeat Collage.
Thank you, Michaela.
All right, the question on everyone's mind is, what the heck is contra dancing?
Well, Gary, that's a great question. The best way to put it is, if you've ever seen any of the period Jane Austen movies, where there's long lines of men and women doing this courtly dance, holding hands, gently turning circles around each other, we're the American cousin to that form. We're a social dance. We get rompy-tompy and just have a lot of fun dancing to live music.
And when was it brought to this country?
It came over very early. These early dances, the English country dances, were brought with the colonists here to the America, and over time they've just evolved into what we have here in America, contra. Sometimes think is opposite or opposite from the English, like so many things we have today are.
And when did you become aware of contra dancing?
I started contra dancing probably about 10 or 12 years ago now. Mm-hmm. In the mainstream contra dance community here in Sonoma County. We have a thriving contra dance here in Sonoma County at Wishman Hall and Monroe Hall over on the Guerneville Road, I think mm-hmm. it is, College Avenue. Mm-hmm. And just fell in love with it and was really excited when in 2004 I heard of a queer contra starting up in the San Francisco Bay Area. And it's like, wow, now I can go and I can ask a man to dance. And it's just been one wonderful relationship since then.
Excellent. Cool. So talk about the birth of the group in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Well, contra dance has been here in the Bay Area for many, many years in the straight community. But it took a few of our queer contra dancers from the East Coast, where it's been happening in a non-gendered specific way for the last 25 years in Boston and New York City. It's a New England traditional dance form. And so a couple contra dancers from the queer community there came to the Bay Area and started talking amongst themselves over coffee one day and said, we need to put a dance on here in the Bay Area. And it was spurned over of a coffee table in somebody's living room.
So how many groups nationwide, queer groups?
Queer groups, there's actually quite a few, and they're growing as time goes along. Boston has one, Western Massachusetts, Atlanta. Seattle has a new one, the Twin Cities, Minneapolis-St. Paul, and, of course, here in the San Francisco Bay Area.
You mentioned the word gender-free. Tell us about gender-free.
Yeah, we really eschew gender roles in our contra dances. If you go to a straight dance and you end up being a man dancing with a man, they give you an apron to put on so that the person who's following is wearing a gender identity garment. Or if you're a woman dancing with a woman, they give one of you a tie. Mm-hmm. And they still use ladies and gents. We completely put all that out of our vocabulary. If you're leading, in this case, you wear an armband, like a red garter. And if you're following, you just have no armband on your arm. You're called a bear, B-A-R-E. And so you are a leader or a follower, a band or a bear throughout this. So there's no reference to gender in the roles that you choose to dance.
Do you kind of decide that at the time you arrive? Or are there people who generally like to be the leaders and those who like to be the followers?
You know, there's not a great lot of difference between leading and following. There's a few little nuanced things, but a lot of times, once you get into it, we tell our beginners, please pick a gender role or role for the dance and stay with it for your evening, just for your own peace of mind. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times, if I was to ask someone to dance, we would just kind of walk up and say, oh, do you want to lead? Do you want to follow? And we just kind of Rochambeau to see who's going to take which role.
So talk about the dance itself. Is it mostly couples, and how do single people get involved?
It's not about couples at all. It's not about couples. You come as an individual to the dance. In the course of the evening, you'll dance with maybe 15 different partners throughout the evening. It's socially enveloping. If you sit on the wall, you are expected to say yes if somebody asks you to dance. You can't wait for something better to come along. You ask if somebody asks you to dance, you say yes. Mm. If you seriously you're tired and want to sit out, you just sit out. And so it's very, you know, women ask men to dance and vice versa. It's a wonderful community of people.
And how many people come to an average dance?
On our evenings, we can have anywhere from 45 in a bad weather night to our first dance in January. We had 130 dancers.
Wow.
Fill the floor, and many of them were first-time dancers and had never tried contra and still had a wonderful dance experience to the very end of the evening.
And people are literally coming from all over the Bay Area. You have the dances in Oakland mostly.
Our dances are at the Lake Merritt Dance Center in downtown Oakland, beautiful veterans building. And we have dancers from the South Bay, Mountain View, Santa Cruz, Palo Alto, all the way up to Sacramento. And myself and my partner and a few others travel down from Sonoma County to Oakland on the first Saturdays of the month.
Now, folks sometimes mistake this for a square dancing kind of experience, and it's not square dancing.
No, though many of the figures that you've heard and remember from that traumatic junior high experience of square dancing where you just had to get through it to get the grade, those do-si-dos, circle lefts, star rights, allemands, all those basic figures that you remember from that experience will translate perfectly into contra dance. But each dance is walked through before you begin and prompted. Mm-hmm. As opposed to the traditional mainstream square dance where you have to go through 16 weeks of classes to learn all the basic figures to then start entry into that dance form. Contra dance, you can walk in for the very first time as long as you know your left foot from your right, your left hand from your right hand, and can count to eight. There's no fancy footwork, no fancy costumes, boots, bells, or whistles. It's just everybody shows up and starts dancing from the very beginning.
Mm. So that brings us to the importance of the caller. Talk about how important the caller is and talk about some of the people who call at your events.
Yeah, our callers are a wonderful group of people. They started as dancers. Sometimes they have some background in math because there's some geometric figures that they have to play out in their mind as to who's going in which direction. And, of course, our callers here in the Bay Area are very versed in changing men and women to bands and bears, so mm-hmm. we insist on it. And if they ever do throw out ladies' chain, we all go ooh and give them a little razzing because we're pretty committed to that. And we ask that all our callers that do come to call for us dance with us before they come back as callers. Hmm. But they're just people from all walks of life that have taken an interest in giving directions and standing up on the stage with the band and giving the directions. Usually they're very clear and succinct in their language and are able to explain the basic figures for us to carry out their instructions. Mm-hmm. And they have a wide repertoire of tunes and dances that were written from the last 75 years that they have their little 3x5 cards that they work from and pick and choose their program from these dances.
Hmm. And talk about some of the musicians who perform live at your dances. You mentioned that it's always a live band.
Always a live band. That's one of the incredible things about a contra dance experience. So you show up and there are 3 to 5 musicians, wonderful musicians, playing traditional jigs and reels and tunes from New England, sometimes old-timey music, but not often, Quebecois and Celtic-infused themes, and lacing together is that wonderful piece you heard from the Moving Violations that was played at your intro. And it's just happy, snappy music that you can dance to. So our musicians come from all over the Bay Area. They play together in small ensembles and just come to our dances to play and just get as much out of playing for us as we do to them. They're definitely one of the hallmarks of contra dancing. Mm.
Are they queer musicians or not necessarily?
We do have several queer musicians that have groups together. There's one notable lesbian couple, Robin and Libby Flowers and McLaren, out of Oakland that are just phenomenal. We always have them in our seasonal cycle of musicians. They're a wonderful, accomplished duo. So, yeah, we do have a few musicians out there.
Hmm. Do they sing or is it instrumental only?
Flowers and McLaren actually have some very nice vocal riffs that go on in the background that add a little nuance to their particular style. Last night we had a band, Swing Farm, that was a keyboard, an upright bass, and a fiddle. Hmm. And they sang some old-timey tunes as well as playing their music.
And what about skill levels in the dancing? Does one advance to?
You can advance. You one of the common things that most people have to get over when they're dancing is kind of a vertigo feeling, because there is a balance and a swing where you get into a ballroom position and you do somewhat of a walking or buzz step around in a circle for 4 to 8 to 10 beats, and some people can find that somewhat dizzying. So there is somewhat advanced to get used to that, and it's a very aerobic dance form. Many people will show up with multiple shirts and dance usually in shorts. Guys usually dance in flowy skirts. So it's a very aerobic activity, and costume is definitely breathable, what you try to work on.
I was looking at the Queer Contra site on the web. Mm. And a couple of the different descriptors that I really, really liked. Somebody said, it's like a rhythmic swirl of twirly awesomeness. And someone else described it as a little folky, a little flirty. So give us a little idea of what happens. You walk into the room, music's playing, people are there.
Yeah, when a dance starts, there's about a 15-minute introduction just to give people the basic idea and overview of the courtesy and etiquette of how to do a contra dance. And the caller will say, take partners for a contra dance. And you look around the room and you find somebody that you think would, you know, take your hand and go up and dance. And you form these long lines in groups of little clusters of 4 up on long lines down the hall. And then the caller will give you some clues. She'll say, turn to your left, this is your neighbor. Turn to your right, that's your partner. Across from you are your neighbors. With your neighbor, circle left. Put your right hands in for a right-hand star. Mm-hmm. Do-si-do, allemande left, balance and swing. And so the caller will give you the basic walkthrough and just talk about it even before the music starts. And then the band will play a couple notes. Usually they call it 4 potatoes. And then the caller will start calling and keep sync with the music and just walk you through it and continue to prompt those calls, which continue to repeat every 32 bars of music. So after 2 or 3 iterations of the caller saying it, people start to get it into their lizard brain and are able to continue dancing without the caller. Mm. And then the caller gradually tunes out, and you just keep doing those figures, and your fellow dancers will kind of prompt you if you tend to forget, which it happens throughout the evening. Mm-hmm. But if the caller sees things are really kind of falling apart, he or she will jump back in and give more cues to keep get you back on for the next 15 or 20 minutes of the dance. And then you're expected to say goodbye, thank you to your partner. A lot of hugging in contra dance, lots of hugging after every dance. And then find another partner for the next dance. And within about 3 minutes, you're back in line again for another dance.
Santa Cruz seems to be a location where you have a gathering. And it's been, what, since 2008, I think?
Yeah. One of the hallmarks of contra dancing is the regular Saturday night or Friday night dance. But we have such a wonderful array of talent in this country of contra dance musicians and callers that we like to get bigger doses of it. So we put on camps across the country where we bring in talent that we might not get to California from time to time and callers that can give us more, a little higher level of dancing, musicians we haven't heard, and a whole weekend of camaraderie. As you mentioned, we have a camp coming up in April down in Aptos, California, and this is our fourth annual Queer Contra Dance Camp. We're very proud of that.
And how many people attend?
We have between 75 and 100 people come to the camp. It's fully catered, and we have this year an amazing duo of musicians called Perpetual Emotion. They are the hottest new contra band in the United States, very sought after duo of musicians, and they actually will lay down a track with fiddle, guitar, didgeridoo, or foot percussion, and then they'll start looping those tracks digitally and then create this massive sound of contra music that just continually changes. And at the end of that dance, they erase it and they start again with fresh new tracks. So we're very excited to have Perpetual Emotion coming through to do our camp for us.
And is the camp a weekend event?
It's a weekend camp. It starts with a Friday evening dance from 8 to 11. And then we're up in the next morning for a beginner's workshop session as well as an advanced dance. So there's things happening throughout the day for beginners and experienced dancers, and they all kind of culminate throughout the day at different dance events.
Hey, talk about some of your other upcoming events.
We have our regular series is our first Saturday of the month in downtown Oakland. We've just relocated to the Lake Merritt Dance Center. It's a beautiful Veterans Hall building, glorious architecture for dancing in. And our monthly dance series features local bands, local callers that play music for us from 8 to 10:30. So we're very excited about that.
Anything planned here in Sonoma County?
You know, we have done an outreach at one point to Santa Cruz, and we'd like to come up here to Sonoma County. We know we're out here. And we'd like to bring contra dance to it. We're a small group. There's only four of us that put this dance together. And so it is a bit of a challenge for us as a group to come up here. But Wishman Hall is a perfect venue. There's so many queer square dance groups that already exist here within the county that we'd love to bring contra to them.
Okay, so there you go, listeners. If you'd like to have that special contra dance here in Sonoma County, give us a call, and we'll make sure that we make all the right arrangements.
So, Mark, tell us what you do when you're not contra dancing.
When I'm not contra dancing, I am a fourth grade teacher here in the Roanoke Park Cotati School Districts, where I serve as an out school teacher.
And how long have you lived here?
I moved up here in 94 to work on my bachelor's degree and my teaching credential. I've stayed ever since.
Nice. From?
From San Francisco Bay Area, Vallejo.
Oh, okay. Wow. You're a Bay Area man.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Want to talk about how you met your partner?
My partner, Mr. Bowers, yes. Contra dance is a wonderful opportunity to meet people. It's not a pickup scene, per se. It's alcohol and fragrance-free at a contra dance. But there's a move called a gypsy, where you and your partner for the dance stare at each other's eyes and just do a 360 around each other walking while staring in each other's eyes. And it is one of the most flirtatious moves. Or it can be not if you don't want it to be. But I did meet my partner now of 7 years at the Queer Contra Dance, at the very first one, and we're very happy to go contra dancing together still today.
That's wonderful. And he's very much involved as well?
He has his own other dance and venues that he participates in. He's a clogger, so he does that on his spare time. But we come together for contra.
Cool. Good.
And you mentioned you're learning to play the fiddle?
Absolutely. You know, the contra dance is hard on the knees. If you're over exert yourself, it's good to wear a soft springy shoe or a soft leather shoe. But eventually I'm thinking my knees might give out, and when they do, I'm hoping to be able to be proficient enough in the fiddle to maybe sit in on a contraband and play for other dancers down the road.
How can people learn more about queer contra dancing and your group and what's available here in the Bay Area?
Yeah, we have a wonderful website called queercontra.org, just as it sounds, that's got all our upcoming calendars and events, a wonderful selection of videos where people who are curious about what this really looks like can see gender-free contra calling and dancing going on, as well as some other dances where these perpetually motion the band we're having at our camp play. So queercontra.org is that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and site. I can vouch for that. Not having a good sense in my mind of what the dance was mm-hmm. like, just to view the two or three videos that are up there, it's a great way to get a good sense of all that goes on. So
wonderful. Glad you had a chance to look at that.
Yeah, it's good fun. Say it again one more time.
Queercontra.org.
Okay.
It's a great website. Mark, we want to thank you for joining us tonight. We wish you the very best, and please keep in touch.
Thank you so much, Gary.
And next time you've got stuff planned right here in Sonoma County, please let us know.
We'll certainly use you. I appreciate that, Michaela.
Okay.
We'll
great.
Take advantage of that.
We'll be right back with Bobby Joe Valentine after we listen to an engaging track from his new CD, A Place to Belong. This is Fly.
One, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three. This is my room and it's robin's egg blue and it's got a few cracks in the ceiling. This is my street where the Minutemen meet and Dad says that I'll never be leaving. I'm 10 years old but I know how to smoke and the drinks help to cure the bad feelings. This is my home and the sticks and the stones are made up of the darkest of things. But in my dreams, I can fly, and I soar, and my feet touch the sky. And it seems I can go anywhere if I try. And the world's not so dark when the clouds make it white. If there's no hope, tell me why. In my dreams, I can fly. Here come the tears and I cover my ears and I swear I can hear my own heart beat. When they stop fighting, to turn out the lights, I pretend that I'm already sleeping. After the violence, alone in the silence, just me and the secret I'm keeping. My dad tells me I'm not worth anything and I've almost admitted defeat. But in my dreams, I can fly, and I soar, and my feet touch the sky. And it seems I can go anywhere if I try. And the world's not so dark when the clouds make it white. If there's no hope, tell me why. In my dreams, I can fly. In my dreams, I can fly. This is my room and it's robin's egg blue and it's got a few cracks in the ceiling. This is my home and the sticks and the stones are made up of the darkest of things. After the violence, alone in the silence, just me and the secret I'm keeping. My dad tells me I'm not worth anything, and I've almost admitted it, but in my dreams, I can fly, and I soar, and my feet touch the sky, and it seems I can go anywhere if I try, and the world's not so dark when the clouds make it white. If there's no hope, tell me why. In my dreams I can fly, and my feet touch the sky, and it seems I can go anywhere if I try. And the world's not so dark when the clouds make it white. If there's no hope, tell me why. In my dreams I can fly. If there's no hope, tell me why. In my dreams I can fly. If there's no hope, tell me why. In my dreams I can fly.
Welcome back to KRCB Outbeat Collage. We're here tonight in studio with Bobby Joe Valentine. Bobby Joe is an award-winning singer-songwriter. He's been performing all around the West Coast and in support of his new CD entitled A Place to Belong. He has won Best Song four times, catch that, four times at the West Coast Songwriters Competition, including awards for Fly, which is the piece that we just heard, and A Hand to Hold. Bobby, welcome to Outbeat Collage.
Thank you for having me on the show.
It's great to have you here. Give us a good sense of how this all began. What instrument did you first pick up? What's your earliest memory of belting out music?
Yeah, I grew up right around here, and I grew up in a really conservative home, and we went to a Baptist church every Sunday, and so we kind of only sung hymns and older songs. So I got used to the piano and the organ real fast, and that's, you know, really all that we listened to pretty much. But I remember when I was 13, I got one of those portable AM/FM radios that you used to have, and unbeknownst to my parents at the time, I would, when they had all gone to sleep, I would put the radio under my pillow. And I would listen to it for like 3 hours before I would finally fall asleep. And so that was a huge influence on me, is like the good, you know, like 90s pop and alternative rock. And so immediately I got turned on to music when I started doing that, and begged my parents for a guitar before I left for college. And the rest is kind of history. I started writing my own songs about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and doors have just been really opening quickly for me. It's been really exciting.
So you just learned to play the guitar before you went to college?
Yeah, I learned to play guitar at 18. And this is a really funny story. So I was in the dormitory and I was playing guitar, and I didn't know a thing about playing guitar. And the Sunday afternoon was when all the dorm students were taking a nap. And so I would play guitar in the lobby loudly, like, you know, unintelligent 18-year-old. And so I'm playing guitar, and I don't know what I'm doing. And all of a sudden, the door opens to a dorm room, and a guy throws a book at me, and it hits me in the head. And no joke, and he closes the door, and I look down, and no joke, this is a true story, the book was How to Play Guitar.
By who wrote the book?
I think it was R.A. Torres.
Mel Bay?
No, not the Mel Bay book.
Not the Mel Bay
book. It was another one. It was kind of some offbeat one that I'd never heard of before. And so no joke, I picked up that book that Sunday afternoon, and that's how I learned to play guitar. And it's really funny because I don't think that guy will ever know that like 2 weeks ago I played at the Fillmore Poster Room. So it's really with that guitar. So it's really, it's ironic how life works.
I think that's the cosmic sense of humor.
Exactly. Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
That's a great story. What other instruments do you play?
Yeah, I play guitar, and I play a little bit of piano, and then I play the ukulele, and I'm just starting to pick up the mandolin a little bit and kind of plunk on it a little bit. And my partner John and I, we just bought a giant marimba. One of the old 60s orchestral marimbas, you know, which is like a giant xylophone, of course. And so I've been playing with that, and that's been a lot of fun. So I think we're going to see some of that on my second
You have
record.
That in the middle of your living room? And
we do. We do. It's now a furniture fixture in
there
our room.
Go.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So when did you decide that you wanted to make a living making music?
Oh, man. Well, I, about 3 years ago, I went through a couple tough tough experiences, none of which are foreign to, you know, any of us in our life, just kind of break off of a relationship and things like that. And some career things fell through. So I had no idea what I was going to do with my life. And that's actually when I wrote my first song, and it's called Big Bad Choice. And it's the only dark one on my first album that I released. And so it was just kind of about losing a love. But then I wrote another song about finding love, and then I wrote another song about being in love, and it just kind of, it was therapy for me, and I kept writing, and I started singing out, and it was very clear when I started singing out and kind of connecting with an audience that this is what I was supposed to do, and so I just kind of, I went full tilt.
That's great. So who are some of your early influences?
Oh, man, it's funny. It's not really an artist, but it's songs. I remember some songs. Like, there's a band called Everclear, and they wrote a song called Wonderful. And it's about a little kid, and it's from the eyes of a little kid going through a divorce. And it's really powerful lyrics, and I'm sure a lot of that influenced me when I ended up writing Fly, about the little boy who dreams he could fly. And there's some older Goo Goo Dolls songs about finding yourself that I still really identify with, and the one that was in the City of Angels soundtrack, of course, Iris, that's just a great song. So it's really the stories and songs that kind of capture my attention. And so I have my iPod playlist is full of, like, there's 140 songs and there's 112 different artists from those songs. So I never really take a whole album and listen to it all the way through. I'm captured by a song usually.
So talk about your decision to be out as a performer.
Yeah, so that was really a profound decision to me, and it was a difficult one to make, because the stigma was that if you said, oh, okay, I'm gay, then a lot of people, it's kind of sad, as the culture they live in, that's all that you are after you say that. And but the decision I finally made is, and my partner helped me make it, is, you know what, this is a big enough part of me that I can be honest about who I am, and the people that know me and love me and connect with my music will, they'll believe that I'm, you know, bigger than just my sexuality. And so I just kind of went forward with it, and, you know, the gay community has accepted it with open arms. I've been able to play at a couple Pride festivals, and I've been able to play at several colleges and kind of tell my story my coming out story to college kids, and they're really encouraged by it, and I'm happy that I'm able to help in that way. It's really cool. So
how important is it for you and maybe other artists in general to really expose your experience and be so personal in your music writing and your performing?
To me, I think it means everything in the world, especially if you want to be somebody that wants to do this as a career. Like, there's those lucky people that they get that hit and then all of a sudden they're all over the radio and they make millions. But if you just want to start from the ground up, people need to fall in love with you as a person much more than, you know, that one song that they really liked that one time, you know. And so to me, that the whole experience of a concert with me has to do with me telling my story, and it's almost like I treat every concert like a little biography, and I always try to tell a little stories of why I write songs and where I was at when I wrote a song. And a lot of that has to do with me coming out, and because that was a really intense experience for me, being a conservative Baptist boy and then coming out into this and being honest about my sexuality. It was kind of a difficult experience, so it means a lot to me, so I always talk about it.
Well, I mean, you're so honest. I saw you performing live last night in Sonoma. You're really comfortable with the audience. You're really comfortable expressing yourself, expressing, you know, that you have a partner, that you're gay. Talk about what performing live means to you.
I love, there's nothing, that's really why I do it. There's nothing like meeting an audience and being able to look them in the eyes and then just being able to share your stories with them. I did a tour, because I'm just starting. I mean, March of last year was when my album came out, and really when I started playing live, period. And so I did a tour down, up to Los Angeles. No, is it down? It's down. It's down to Los Angeles and back. I always get the directions wrong, and my partner always bugs me about it. Anyways, down to Los Angeles and back, and I did all house concerts. So I did 36 house concerts. And it was the coolest experience in the world to be singing a love song that I had wrote, and to have this, you know, this older couple, or just a couple in general, like sitting in the front row, and I would say a line in a love song, and one of them would just like squeeze the other partner's hand a little bit or something like that. And that's like, to me, that's what music is all about. It's all about those personal connections. So I wouldn't trade. There's a lot of people that would just be happy as a studio musician to just kind of sit in a studio and record and then just have their stuff on the radio. But I've got to connect with people. That's kind of my thing.
Yeah, that feedback is important.
Exactly, yeah.
Give us a little sense of your writing process. What is your creative groove that inspires you, and how do you get into it?
Yeah, that's a good question. that's a really good question. I kind of tend to get inspired by ideas, I guess. So like one of my newest songs is a song called Chase Away My Dark, and I write about all the verses are about being afraid of love, and then the chorus is just this defiant, like, I need some love to chase away my dark. And I wrote it for a friend of mine that just had a really tough couple months. A couple people, a kid that he was mentoring passed away, like an 18-year-old, and just all of this really difficult, like, injustice happened in his life. But he had his partner with him at the time, and they really loved each other. And I was up at this ranch in Modesto visiting them as they were going through this crisis, and it was really clear that having a partner was really helping him get through this struggle. And it just was such a cool picture to me. And I got to thinking about how the thing that we need the most is what we're the most afraid of sometimes, and that's love. And just right there, actually, at that ranch, I sat down and wrote the entire song to Chase Away My Dark. And I was actually driving one of their four-wheelers when it hit me, and I had to like jump off the four-wheeler and run inside and write. And pretty much within like 10 minutes, I'd written all of the verses and the chorus to that song. So it's usually like quick flashes of inspiration when I write a song. I don't, this is going to sound cheesy, but there's not a lot of methodology to when I write a song. There's not a lot of science behind it. It's just something hits me, and I think it's a truth that a universal truth that a lot of people will connect with, and I write about it.
So you usually start with the lyrics or melody?
Oddly enough, they usually arrive at exactly the same time for me. And I listen to a lot of music and I read a lot of books. Mm. So I think, you know what I mean? When it's time for that song to come out, it's all mixed and it's just in my subconscious and it's ready to go and it just lands on the page.
I don't want to backtrack too much, but having come from a pretty conservative religious background myself, I know the difficulty in making the leap from all of that, you know, early church belief system to being who you are today. My goodness, you know, all the way from
yeah,
listening to, you know, sneaking to listen to your radio under the pillow to here you are today out and about. Was that a hard transition for you and maybe your family?
Oh, yes. It was incredibly hard. It was incredibly hard. When my parents first heard that I was gay, then they immediately wanted to send me to repertory school and to a reformation place, you know. And there's a place in Illinois that helps with, you know, pornography, pedophilia, drug abuse, and homosexuality, and fixes it all the exact same way.
All completely linked.
The exact same, you know, 12 steps. No, I'm just kidding. But it was really a shock for them. And I think it's the way that I see it is they grow up in that culture. They live their whole life in that culture. And it's when I walk into their home now, I kind of almost treat it as if I was walking into, you know, Africa or just some whole different country, because really they've grown up in this. It's all they've been taught. And they're told to stay away from knowledge that might mess with their worldview. They're told that. And some people can't move past it. And so for me, it was a very compassionate approach with my parents. And I almost took it instead of like thinking to myself, what are they going to say about me? What are they going to think when I say this? And worrying about it. I almost took the approach of like how best can I deal with my sexuality in a way that they can understand it and they can ease into it and continue a relationship with me? Because I still wanted a relationship with my parents. And so I dealt with it very gently, and they've come a long way. They've come a long way. I mean, they always ask about John when we visit now, and they're just 10 minutes away from me where John and I live now. So we still visit once a week, and they're very gracious about the whole thing.
That's great. That's a powerful model. And probably I hope that if anyone is listening, that they can maybe take a little bit of your courage and apply it to their own situation as well. So,
yeah, I hope so. I think a big thing for me when I was going through it was the hardest part for me when I was, because I had a very strong faith, and I went to, you know, I mean, I went to Bible college after finishing high school, and I spent 4 years in Bible college, and then I was a music director at a church for 2 years before I ended up starting to write my own songs. So I was really, and I had a very deep faith, and I still do have a deep faith. And so reconciling that with my sexuality was the hardest thing, because the feeling is if the church doesn't approve, then God must not approve. And I had to deal for a long time with the dark idea that maybe God didn't like me anymore or didn't love me because of my sexuality. And a really wonderful idea, truth, came to me one day, and I actually ended up writing a song called Still in Love, which is on my album. And it's all about worrying that God's being still in love with God. You know, I'm still in love with you. I'm still in love with you. And when you see the mess I made, what are you going to do? I'm still in love with you. And not knowing what he's going to feel like. And it kind of climaxes with me kind of walking down the road to God, being worried about what he's going to say. And then the twist chorus is, but you're still in love with me. And just realizing that everything was okay in the world, and that there was no big man in the sky that was going to condemn me for who I was already. And it was, I don't know, it was a really important revelation. And it's been cool to play at a lot of universities and pass that on to a lot of college students that are dealing with it at the moment. They're dealing with
Absolutely.
Being honest to their parents and trying to comfort them about that.
Is that a track that's on your debut disc, A Place to Belong?
It is, yes.
Okay, so if people want to hear that, A Place to Belong is the
that's the album
to get.
Yes.
There you go.
Great. Talk about recording A Place to Belong.
Oh, that was an incredible experience. So my partner John is an antique shop owner, and one of the dealers that just rents space in his antique shop is a former guy that was really connected with the music industry, still has a studio out in Arizona and everything like that. And I was just passing out these really bad quality demos of me singing. They were really bad. Like, they were like me sitting in front of my laptop, and the microphone wasn't working well, and the microwave, you can like hear the microwave and the refrigerator in the distance. They were bad. Like, they were just not. And but I was passing them out to anyone that I could, because I was just starting and I didn't know any better. And so I gave it to this friend that was renting some space in John's antique shop. He listened to it. He liked it. And he said, hey, if you would like to record an album, I think the time is now. I think you're ready. Why don't you go out to Arizona, and I'll let you use my studio. And so he donated his studio to me. And John and I talked about it, and we thought it was time. And so I flew out to Arizona, and I spent 7 days. We rounded up 3 other musicians that are some of the most talented musicians I know to this day. They're amazing. They learned all of my songs. And for 7 days, 14 hours a day, we were in this recording studio. And two of the songs I actually ended up writing that are on the album, I wrote during that process. And it was such a neat experience, because I went somewhere I'd never been, and I was there for 7 days, almost in this completely different space. And I was making this album that was going to define my life for the next couple of years. So it was really a wonderful, profound experience. It was very cool.
The video for Fly is very, very beautifully filmed and really talks a lot about the musical experience. Give us some insight as to the making of that particular video.
Yeah, well, there was this, believe it or not, there was a guy that put out an ad in a classifieds online website saying, I'm looking to go into music video production, and I'm interested in making my first music video, and I'm looking for a good song. And if you have a song, and I was looking for a good video director, and I had a song, but I was looking for a good video director. So I emailed him, and I didn't think much of it because it was a classified ad, and you never know what you're going to find in, you know, a classified online website. But I replied, and we ended up meeting for breakfast in Sonoma, and his name is Bruce Brown. And come to find out, he won what was essentially like the Rolling Stones for photography 2 years in a row. He's one of the best photographers in the nation, and he was just looking to transition into video work, and he wanted to do a music video. So we met, we completely clicked, and he basically we split the cost of all the materials of the music video. We found the child actor. We went into a giant art studio, and we built our own room, our own 12-foot-high, 12-foot-long room that's a square. And we recorded this music video of this kid that was in this room and needed to get out of this room, and had dreams of flying and getting out of his circumstances. And it was one of the best experiences of my life making that music video. It was really cool, and we were really proud with how it turned out.
And people can see that on YouTube.
Absolutely. If they just search my name and they search Fly, then it'll show up.
Good. Gary, you saw him performing at Hot Monk last night,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was great. It was great. Talk about some of your other upcoming performances. I mean, you've performed in some really interesting places.
Yeah. I've had the honor. There's at the Fillmore in San Francisco, there's this poster room, and it's not the headlining gig and it's not the opening gig, but in between the two, people come up and they're just pretty much waiting for the headliner to come on, and they have people come and play the poster room. And so Stephanie from Live Nation, the organization that books the Fillmore, heard me and decided to have me for the poster room. So it's great. I've been able to play there a couple times. And there's a local large theater called the Mystic Theater, and it's had Red Hot Chili Peppers there, and it's had some huge groups there. And I've had the privilege of playing with my full band there a couple times. And then I've done a couple tours as well, and gone up and down the West Coast, and Alberta Rose Theater in Portland, and Stone Soup Theater in Seattle, and some really amazing places. And it's really hard work. There's nothing that's harder than trying to get people out to a show. That's probably the hardest part of my job is promotion. But once you do get there and all your worries are assuaged and there's people in the seats, then it's the coolest experience in the world. So I've had the privilege of flying at a lot of places. March 9th, there's a Petaluma acoustic series starting up, and I'm actually going to be heading it up. And we're just going to be doing kind of intimate acoustic experiences in different really great sound stages. Some of them are going to be like old churches that have really good acoustics, and some of them are just going to be different performance halls around the area. So March 9th, I'm going to be kicking that off, and details for that are on my website, BobbyJoeValentine.com, if people want to check it out.
Good. So what words of wisdom and encouragement would you give to other budding singer-songwriter?
Yeah, I would say that the music industry is the first thing I would say, just the honest thing, is that the music industry is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And I've had, like, in my admittedly short life, I've only been around here for about 26 years, but I've had about like 20 different jobs, and ranging from manual labor to performance. And the music industry in and of itself is definitely the most difficult thing I've ever done. So really do some soul searching and realize that's what you want to do before you launch full steam into it. And then just do open mics and see if people are connecting with your lyrics, and search the crowds, get to the point where you can look out and search the crowd's faces. And if you see there's like a little glitter in their eyes from something you say, and that something you say is connecting with them on a deeper level, then then just go for it. Just go for it. And it'll work if it's what you're meant to do.
Good. Well, I think you're living proof of that. I mean, you certainly have come a long way, just meteoric, just in the last few years. And it really began.
You.
It really began with you saying, this is who I am, this is what I want to do. And the conviction and the authenticity of that has taken you forward. So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And you mentioned last night that you recorded some songs for an EP that you were offering to friends.
Yes. Yeah. There's actually just a free EP I recorded, and it's just acoustic. It's friendly, warm songs. But since then, I've been hired for a few weddings, so I guess it's a really romantic EP. And just love songs and songs I love. But if you go on, there's a site called Noise Trade. And if you go on noisetrade.com/my name, Bobby Joe Valentine, you can download that EP. It's completely free, and it's just kind of my gift to my fans and listeners that have been so supportive of me.
So I know you're in the midst of promoting this CD, but are you thinking about your next?
Absolutely. I've been excited about the second album for a while. And when I wrote Fly and it won Song of the Year at West Coast Songwriters, I got worried. There's an intimidation that comes with that, because it was like, oh, what if that's the best that I can do? Like, what if I'm never going to write another song that's going to impact people? There's just that pressure. And you'd think it would go the other way around. You'd think like you'd win that award and it'd be like, oh, good, now I can, now I'm set. But it's not. It's just like there's always another thing, because there's another album people are expecting. And I was really worried. But then I started writing songs like Chase Away My Dark and other songs. And so I have about 11 songs. We're all ready to go. And then hopefully July or August we'll be releasing that second album. April or May we'll be recording. And I'm really excited about this one. I think
excellent.
It's gonna,
do you have a working title?
I think right now the working title is Chase Away My Dark. I think that's going to be the title track, and it's going to be the album name. I think that defines a lot of what my songs are trying to do in the world. And so I'm excited about that.
Excellent. Well, we wish you the best, Bobby.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Please stay in touch. When the new CD comes out, we'll have you back.
Will do. Promise. Thanks so much.
We want to thank our listeners for joining us tonight. Thank you again to our wonderful guests, Mark Gallipo from San Francisco Bay Area Queer Contro and singer-songwriter Bobby Joe Valentine. Thank you, Mary Moore Campagna, for engineering. Listen to Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m. here on KRCB Public Radio. You can also stream live on krcb.org or listen to previous Outbeat Radio shows, including this one in a few days, on outbeatradio.com.
And next week, Jeff Besham and Greg Moralia will host Outbeat Now. Gary and I will return with Outbeat Collage Out in the Arts on Sunday, March 18th. Our guests that evening will be transgender photographer Karen Massing and Joy Agnostis from Out West Dance. We leave you with another track from Bobby Joe Valentine's CD, A Place to Belong. This is Before the End. Once again, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Oh. We walk on eggshells till we fall. We don't give much until we lose it all. We hear the greener pastures call. But our fear is too big and our hearts too small. This is your life with one chance to live it best. This is the right time. Tomorrow you'll have less of it to spend. After this moment's past, there's no refund. This breath can be your last. Make it a good one. Love is the best thing you can give before the end.